Very good morning to you. Welcome in to today's program. What a day, 24 hours yesterday it was. Leo's departure from politics, we're looking at that on today's program. We're looking at independent Ireland again and the foothold that it's getting from there. We're looking at children's eye care on today's program. And the people at Lawrencetown, they're getting active. We're also looking at time for action against discrimination. The Galway Traveller Movement join us on that. David Connell joins us from the Connacht Tribune. We've got Pet Talk, Culture Corner, Hours to Protect and Music Mornings. All of that and more between now and 12 midday. Comment lines are open if you want to get through to us on 086 38 33 55 3 and 091 770 077. It's Thursday. Good morning to you. A very good morning to you. What a week it's been, I have to say, when you think about Kieran Cannon and what he started by deciding not to run in the forthcoming election, indeed, whenever that will be. And then the announcement yesterday by Leo Varadkar, an emotional one on the steps of government buildings yesterday, that he was stepping down and he would stay on as Taoiseach until the new Taoiseach has been appointed. Let me go to the Chief Whip, indeed, and Deputy Hildegard Nocton, who joins me on the line this morning. Hildegard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
A fairly difficult 24 hours, and you were on the plinth with him, with his colleagues indeed, from the Cabinet as well. An emotional statement by him.
Yes, it was a whirlwind day. It started what we all thought was just a regular Cabinet meeting on Wednesday. We always meet as a Fine Gael senior Cabinet ministers. We meet before the Cabinet meeting, and Leo gave us his news, and I must say we were all very shocked, and it was quite an emotional moment, I have to say, and obviously for him it was a really brave decision. And I know you mentioned Kieran Cannon there earlier. I would have had the same conversation with Kieran when you actually decide to say these words and actually say that you're going to step away. But I think for the Taoiseach in particular, I think a really brave and honest decision, because it's not often you see people in positions of power like that who decide to step away in the interests of what he felt were in the interests of the country. He felt that he had given it everything he could and it was time to hand the baton over. So yeah, a very emotional day. We had a parliamentary party meeting as well yesterday evening, and it was just lovely to hear the comments coming from the room and people's memories of Leo when they met him first and how he helped them all throughout their political careers, and indeed my own. He appointed me to the negotiating team after the 2020 general election, and then appointed me as a super junior minister in the Department of Transport, mm-hmm. and then Chief Whip. So really he's led a very a distinguished career in politics as minister and as Taoiseach, and I think we can't forget what he did throughout all those Brexit negotiation talks, the fears around a hard border between North and South, that was protected, our place in Europe was protected, and I don't think we'll ever forget his speech in Washington at the start of the pandemic. And I think the fact that he comes from a medical background, a doctor and a really good communicator, he really reassured everybody as we went through that really difficult period for the country, and also bringing us through the cost of living crisis. So yes, an emotional day to answer your question.
I could see it was. I could see the whole lot of you on the plinth as it was unfolding at 16 minutes past 12. A difficult place to be, but at that stage some of it had sunk in with you. But I mean, the situation is that some media outlets have been digging to see what the real reason for this is. But he said it himself yesterday, just take it at face value, this is what I'm doing. They seem to have accepted that by this morning.
Yeah, it was on. Yeah, I really, really do believe, and he would say this himself, that it's probably a form of burnout. You know, he's been in politics for so long, and being Taoiseach and leader of a party is one thing, it has its stresses, and then to lead the country, it's just relentless. It's 24/7. It's a real privilege. He really enjoyed it. He has done so much in areas I've just outlined and many more. Mm. But I suppose there comes a point in everyone's, I suppose, life where you just have to make a decision for yourself personally. And I think he'd probably just, you know, ran out of gas and this, and felt that he really and was thinking of the country and coming up to the local and European elections. And I think that was to the forefront of his mind, saying, well, he wanted to give the new leader of Fine Gael the time to bed in, to set out a new vision for the party and for the country. Mm. And really, it's about making sure that we have a stable country here coming into, I think, even when you look across the world, we were coming into very unstable geopolitical times. So it's really important that Ireland, that the centre holds, and that we give whoever comes into this new position the time to bed in and to lead the party and indeed the country then through the next general election as well, whenever that happens.
So what happens to Leo Varadkar then? And I mean, as of last night, he has stepped down as leader indeed and president of Fine Gael. He remains on as Taoiseach until such time as his successor has been appointed. He's going to continue to represent his constituency. Has he indicated, will he go in the next general election or will he leave politics altogether?
He hasn't made a decision on that in relation to the next general election. But as you say, he's over in Europe today. Yeah. It'll be his last European Council meeting. He'll continue in his role as Taoiseach. He'll then, I suppose, be on the backbenches after the new leader is appointed, I would assume. And he said that he will play his part and continue to contribute and help out within the party. And I think which just really shows, I suppose, the person he is and his commitment to the party. But I think it really shows the human side of politicians that people don't often see when you see people on, you know, prime time or on political debates. You know, everyone's human at the end of the day, and there's only so yeah. much that you can give. And I think he was really honest about that, and I think it's to his credit. And I'm sure a very difficult and emotional day for him and indeed his family watching that, because to think about a decision and to mull over it is one thing, but to actually then come out and say it, and you could hear it in his voice yesterday on the steps of government buildings, it was an emotional day. But I think everyone rallied around him, I have to say, and the party will be united in this transition, which will be a quick transition now over the next 2 or 3 weeks.
I said to one of his colleagues last night, now that it's out there in the open domain, it's easier to deal with it because the decision has been made. And like, he's been talking about making this decision since Christmas. And do you think to the outcome of the referendum, copper fastened for him? I believe he made the decision around Christmas time and thought about it until he announced it yesterday. Do you think the referendum had an impact on whether he would go or stay?
I don't think so, and I don't like to speak for him, but as you say, this was something he'd been mulling for a while. Yeah, I think it's something he's been mulling over for a while, and he was just getting tired, I think, in that job. As I say, it is relentless. He had done great work, gone through a number of crises, through Brexit, COVID, the cost of living crisis. I think he's 17 years in politics at, yeah. you know, the top of his game. And I think physically, mentally, emotionally, there comes a point where, and I think this is a very generous thing he did in giving a new, whoever that new leader will be, time to bed in. So to answer your question, no, I think this is something that he'd been thinking about over a few months, and then supposed to try and get the timing right to give the new person that time to bed into the leadership role, I think was at the forefront of his mind. So it was an initial shock for everybody, but as we think about it and the timing now, and the Executive Council met last night, and they clearly set out the steps now that are going to be in place, to put in place to elect a new leader. So I think the timing of what he did was actually very good, and has been quite helpful for the party, although still a shock.
Okay, so then moving forward then on this one, so your colleague indeed, Simon Coveney, came out last evening and said that he is not going to go for the leadership. Would you consider going for the leadership, Hildegard Nocton?
Well, I haven't had a chance to think about that. Yesterday, I went straight from the cabinet meeting into a legislation meeting. I met with all government departments to lay out the summer legislative process. So I know a lot of people are reflecting today and over the weekend. Nominations open today, this morning at 10 a.m. Yeah. and they close on Monday. So there is time. I know that anyone in politics would have aspirations for that, and it's important that everyone, I think, thinks about the future now, not only the party but the country. I think that will be at the forefront of everyone's mind.
If you look at the plinth though yesterday, there's yourself, there's Heather Humphreys, there's Simon Harris, and there's Pascal Donoghue. Simon Coveney has ruled himself out. So I think I covered the plinth there fully. Helen McEntee, sorry, yeah. Helen McEntee may not, in my opinion, go for it. Pascal Donoghue, who has not shown his hand yet, Simon Harris has shown his hand and said that he will be putting his name forward for it. So then it's down to yourself, Heather Humphreys, and maybe Helen McEntee. But if Pascal Donoghue is in for a larger job, he's got young family and otherwise, would he want to be Taoiseach?
I think everyone in politics would have an aspiration to, you know, to be in a position to give more and to be able to represent not only their constituency but their country. And I think that's what everyone is looking at. And I suppose they're looking at their own personal circumstances as well, over today and certainly this weekend. I think the leader, the next leader, Fine Gael, has to be somebody who, you know, understands rural Ireland, understands the regions, the importance of investment in the regions. And that'll be certainly the forefront of my thought process in relation to that. But I think we're very lucky in Fine Gael, where we have a wealth of talent, not just in the cabinet, but outside the cabinet as well. So I know that, I think the next day or two will kind of crystallise a lot. And as I say, the nominations close on Monday. So there is time over the weekend for people to think about their own positions and what they want to do.
But at this stage, you can't tell me yes or no?
No, so I haven't had a chance. Okay. Yesterday was just, as I say, a whirlwind.
No, I can understand that, so let's park that. But then from a membership point of view, on the parliamentary party meeting that was held last evening, and Simon Coveney and told us extremely strong at that, I mean, if it's a thing, so Simon Harris has said yes, he will put his name forward, and he has stated that, and they're working on that as we speak now. But if it's a thing that Pascal Donoghue puts his name in the ring on this one, and then it's down to between Pascal and Simon Harris, which way do you think the Fine Gael electorate itself would go? I would say they would go with Pascal Donoghue.
Well, I suppose that's for the membership to decide.
Do you know the membership very well now, though?
As well.
Yeah, no.
Sorry. Yeah, so I suppose what will happen is by Monday we'll know who's in the race. I think it will be healthier, and it would be healthier for the party if we had a contest, and that's where we'll have regional hustings next week. They're on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. They'll be live streamed as well on our Fine Gael social media, and I think a lot of our members would like that, an opportunity for them to have their say, to hear the potential candidates to set out their vision, not only for the party but for the country. And then the parliamentary party, we've a weighted system. They've 65% of the vote. Our membership across the country, Fine Gael membership, will have 25% of the vote. And then our councillors, our city and county councillors, have a 10% weighting. Okay. So we'll have a polling. Our polling days will be between the 2nd and the 4th of April. And then we have our Ardesh in Galway, as you know, in the university, on the 6th of April. And the new leader will be announced the day before on the Friday. So really, it's going to be a matter of waiting to see who puts their name forward. I think it's important that we do have that contest. I think it's healthy, as I say. Okay. And then people will be able to set out their stalls. And I think the membership will give their views as well around the future, not only of the party and the country. So all will be revealed on the 5th of April in relation to the new leader.
We'll go to Robert. Thank you, Dick, for joining us. Minister Hildegard Nocton and Chief Whip, thank you so much for joining us today on the programme. Again, comment lines open if you do want to get through to us on 0917700077 and 086 38 33 553. Now, let me move on this one, because a person who's been extremely close and one of his closest allies and friends indeed has been the former Chief Whip when it comes to the government indeed, and Fine Gael, Senator Sean Kyne joins me. Sean, morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Were you shocked by this announcement like everybody else yesterday, or did you get the heads up on it?
No, absolutely shocked. I was at the health committee discussing issues in Galway, from Clifton District Hospital to the capital plans in UHG, with Bernard Gloucester, CEO of the HSE, yesterday, when colleagues were showing me breaking news messages of a major announcement being underway. I thought there may be resignations from cabinet. I thought maybe, were Simon Coveney or Pascal announcing they're moving on or leaving or going on to pastures new or something like that. I wasn't sure what was happening, and it dawned on me, it has to be something even bigger than that. So we sort of started to guess there's only one explanation. And that was that Leo was stepping down.
You know, so him
a huge shock.
You know him very well. You're nearly cut from the same cloth, but you know him extremely well. Was he misunderstood in politics? Because he was a very private person, but was Taoiseach of the country.
Yeah, I spoke to him. I spoke at the parliamentary party last night, and I said that it's hard for people to believe sometimes that, you know, you're Taoiseach of the country, but you're actually a shy person, a private person. And sometimes that's mistaken for being aloof. He was, or he is, sort of shy and awkward, perhaps a bit like myself in that regard. And that's, you know, that's just the way he was. But he had a, you know, a huge brain, someone that was interested in politics all his life, the main focus, the cut and thrust, everything about politics, it just excited him. And not just Irish politics, he had just a keen interest in politics. And I was happy to support him back in 2017, you know, as a fresh face, a new vision. And, you know, I was surprised. He was very emotional yesterday. Hadn't seen that before, I have to say. I've seen him angry. I haven't seen him emotional. Mm. And then he appeared before the parliamentary party, and I have to say he was down. He was conscious, like you do too often in politics, you think of the negatives. You know, you're hard on yourself about the negatives rather than the positives. And yeah, that's the way he was yesterday. And, you know, when you think of the major challenges that that he faced, Brexit was all consuming during that period of time. And, you know, he was the one that stood up for the island as a whole in ensuring that there was no hard border, as Enda Kinney had done before, and in fairness, all the politicians across the system. But he was tough on the DUP. He stood up to the DUP, and they didn't appreciate it. They didn't like him. But he stood up in ensuring that there was no hard border on the island of Ireland. And you know, the institutions are now back up and running, and that's important as well. So look, he faced challenges. COVID was you know, difficult, and people talk about opinion polls and general election results. Like, Fine Gael had a great local elections in 2019 and great European elections, and then a few months later we had a very poor general election, you know. So it's Sinn Féin had a very bad local and European elections, and then went on to have a good general election. So it's hard to predict these things in the political cycle. I mean, you know, in the early stages of COVID and for a period of time, you know, his support, his personal support and Fine Gael party support was in the mid-30s. So it's it can be unpredictable, the political cycle, at times.
It can we look to the future then? I mean, any time he was in the studio with us, he was very, very, you know, he was very open. So he was, and very, and spoke very openly. It's just that shyness, I think, that people did not know of the man. And just because he was Taoiseach, accepted, or expected indeed, that he would be very jolly, like the likes of Enda Kenny or Bertie Hernand or otherwise. He didn't have that quality. But anyway, looking into the future, I mean, it seems to be a two-horse race, but Simon Harris has said he is going forward. Again, Pascal Donoghue has not made the decision, but if he does, then there's a contest, and then perhaps Jennifer, Karen McNeill, Hildegard Nocton, Heather Humphreys.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Simon Harris has never been shy about his ambition, and that's a positive as well. No more than Leo. Leo was never shy in about his ambition, and you know, one of the reasons I supported him was his support in you know, the In 59 My Column project, which was the top project I had in politics. And he came out as Minister for Transport to a residence meeting, or a public meeting in My Column, and got abuse at the time, but delivered ultimately that project of the upgrade of the N59 into My Column. But yeah, I mean, at this stage, Simon Harris obviously will be nominated. We're waiting to see, will Pascal declare or not. He was at the parliamentary party yesterday. I said to him, you have decisions to make, Pascal, and he said, I absolutely still in shock. Didn't expect this, you know, this morning when he came into cabinet. Obviously, Jennifer may go. Hildegard has not said no there. So, I mean, look, I suppose the issue here is, and while its nominations close on Monday, of course, things can be wrapped up very quickly if there's an overwhelming support for one candidate. So I suppose whilst there is theoretically time, I don't think any candidate, including Hildegard, would want to leave things too late if they're considering running. there may be a hustings next week, but there won't be if there's only one candidate,
yeah.
obviously.
Yeah.
And as it stands at the moment, Simon Harris is effectively nominated, so we're waiting to see if there will be others. A contest will be healthy. I'm a member of the Executive Council. We met last night to put in train the process and the timelines, and culminating, if there is a contest in the counting of votes in Galway, the day before the Ardesh, and then the leader's speech on Saturday the 6th of April in University of Galway. So, yeah, whilst things are in play, the timeline is actually, could get quite short if one candidate runs away with nominations.
Well, it's wait and see. It's going to be interesting times, so it is. But thanks, Leo, for joining us today. Senator Sean Kyne joining us there. I was extremely close to Leo Varadkar and would be really cut from the same cloth. Humble people, but there you go. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. We're going to Independent Ireland again next. Some of the comments coming into us today. Michael Ring for Taoiseach. It would be a long-awaited win for Mayo, wouldn't it? This caller said. Hilligar Nocton would be an excellent Taoiseach. Hard-working, modest and listens. I don't vote Fine Gael. I'm disappointed with her councillor's lack of ambition when facing tough decisions. But Ciarán Cannon and Hildegard are very fine people and accomplished politicians. Go, Hildegard. Talk about a load of political spoof from Hildegard Nocton. Hi, Keith. It's a worrying situation when so many politicians are either quitting politics or stepping down. I have a sense that something is coming down the line and these politicians are getting out before the proverbial hits the fan. It's too coincidental. Keith, it's, this caller said, whoever takes over from Leo will have big shoes to fill. He's done an amazing job and will be missed. And this caller said to us here, Leo is becoming a priest, I heard. Really? Really, really? And they just keep coming in there, those comments, some of them that I can't broadcast, unfortunately. There's some funny ones coming in there. Anyway, let me go to Declan Kelly, who joins me on the line today. Councillor Kelly, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith, and good morning to your listeners.
You're not throwing your hat in the ring now. You want to become Taoiseach or anything. We'll get to the nomination. Come here, congratulations to you, Loughrea Councillor Declan Kelly, because you've joined the new Independent Ireland Party ahead of the June local elections. Again, well done to you.
Thank you, Keith. And it's funny, you should have read out that comment about the possibility of Leo Varadkar becoming a priest. I'm actually a former priest myself of Clonfert Diocese, from That's Bishop right. John Kirby's time. I left 12 years ago because I wanted the option to get married and so on. But that's where my roots in this job started, because the late councillor Pat Hines, who died only a few weeks ago, sadly, worked alongside me when I was parish priest of Leitrim and Ballydougan to get a lot done in the parish in terms of updating our public lighting along the roads and car parking facilities and so on. And when he was retiring, he asked me to take on his job, and I did that, you know.
And again, I suppose, it was a listener that sent in that text that he's going to become a priest. I don't know his religion. I don't know whether he would or he wouldn't. But isn't it a quirk of fate that you were that priest and made the decision to have the option to get married and came out of the priesthood? But you had that hard decision to make, no more than he did yesterday.
It was a very difficult decision for me to make in the first instance. I took a long time agonising over it, because I really loved my work. I found it very fulfilling. I'm still in contact with a lot of my former colleagues, and I would actually call into Bishop John Kirby in Capitagal every so often just for a chat and whatnot. But you know, I understand that it was a difficult decision for Leo Varadkar. He's a highly intelligent man. I respect him for his intelligence, and he has done some good things. But I do feel at the same time, Keith, and I say this as someone whose father voted Fine Gael, whose grandfather voted Fine Gael, and so on, I feel that there's a deep disconnect there at the moment between the current government and the people.
Yeah,
especially in rural Ireland, you know. And I don't think we need a change of Taoiseach. I think we need a general election. I think we need a change of direction. And I don't think that changing Taoiseach, I mean, we're having our third Taoiseach now in the lifetime of this government is going to do an awful lot to address the issues on the ground, and certainly not the issues I'm seeing.
Well, when it broke yesterday at about 12 minutes to 12 when we got the first note of it, and we were talking about it, I really felt that there would be a general election. And I think now is the time to do it. Just clear the boards, get the election done, get local elections, European elections, general election, get the whole lot done, get new people into the Seanad, get the whole thing done. And then start again, draw a line in the sand. 5 years then from this date onwards, just move forward. Whoever is in, if it's Sinn Féin, if it's Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, if it's in the independent grouping, yourself, Independent Ireland as part of it, which I could see it happening the way Michael Fitzmaurice and then the crew actually work together. Whoever it is, just get on with it from there. Take us, there's no point in... Like we've had a massive referendum.
I agree 100% with you, Keith, because, I mean, even another year of this government is not going to change the situations I'm seeing. I'm meeting people every single day, and one of the lovely parts about being a councillor, somebody asked me, is it like being a priest? It is. It's like having a much bigger parish, but a lie-in on a Sunday, if you want to put it that way. I'm going out to the houses, I'm meeting people. I'm meeting people who are sleeping on sofas in relatives and friends' houses because they have nowhere to go. I have a situation where if you take the N65, the road from Loughrea to Portumna, a national route. Now, you've had families there for generations, and younger couples connected to those families who are trying to build along the road and start their lives out. And that's what we want. We want younger couples building houses in rural Ireland, keeping our parishes, our schools and our sporting clubs alive. And Transport Infrastructure Ireland is objecting in every instance to those young couples building there. Despite, and it's not like, Keith, they want to build an agricultural college or a housing estate. They just want an opportunity to rear their families in the area in which their own families have lived for generations. But Transport Infrastructure Ireland are saying they're going to pose a traffic hazard. Just a handful of young couples. And I mean, this is going on while TII have failed repeatedly to do anything about the Kilmeen Cross Junction, which is absolutely deadly. They need to reconfigure it and light it, and they haven't done that.
Just somebody said there, would you please ask Declan, what are his... sorry, I have to find it here again. I just had it there. Please ask Declan, what are his solutions to solve the problems of rural Ireland? You're talking about them there. I came across something yesterday, Declan, where somebody called me that I know extremely well, and they wanted to put a mobile home in the back garden of their family home, just purely to get off the couch, because they're fed up on the couch. And there's a husband and wife and two kids, and they've been living with the parents now for quite a bit, and the parents don't want them anymore, quite simply they're fed up with them in the house. But they have to go for planning permission to put a mobile home behind their parents' house, and they've been told, don't bother applying for planning permission because we're not going to give it to you.
And that's silly. I mean, that's an absolutely silly regulation. One of the issues that are one of the solutions to the housing crisis is a large-scale modular build. We're already doing it in certain places. And that would help a lot of people. And these modular builds, Keith, have a lifetime or a lifespan of about 60 years, you know. There are a lot of... we had 23 million spent recently on a referendum that for not very many people understood, you know.
No, well, look what happened.
And yet we have to go out here and beg for a barrel of tar to line a road. And I'm seeing roads that are completely undrivable. We're not getting anything like the funding we need for roads. I mean, it, no matter what way you look at it, there is a disconnect between the government and rural Ireland and... This is part of it.
It's not just on your side. I mean, I have to go and get a shock absorber checked today on the car because I went into a pothole on the Drum Road, so I did. Absolutely shocking. Declan, good luck with it, and keep your eye on Mr. Fitzmaurice as well, and perhaps you won't adopt his second language. His first language is English. His second language, you may not just adopt. But we wish you every success.
Thank you very much, Keith.
You got it, and you got it quickly, so you did. And I love his second language and his use of his second language as well. Keith, this caller said the House of Cards is falling down around them, and they're getting out because they know there's going to be get a thrashing at the polls. housing and healthcare system, migration and emigration are in dire straits. This country is on a cliff edge, this caller said. Would somebody be positive, for God's sake, this morning? Now, just news coming in there that Helen McEntee has said that she will not be contesting the leadership race for Fine Gael. So that's another one down. Hildegard hasn't given us clarity on it. She'll think about it. Simon Coveney is the only one that has come out and said that he will. From there then, Simon Coveney has said no. Simon Harris, what did I say? Simon Coveney? I get me Simons mixed up. Simple Simon me. So Simon Harris said he is going to. Simon Coveney said last night he's not. So that's two. Heather Humphreys hasn't come clean yet. Pascal Donoghue is the dark horse here. If Pascal Donoghue hangs out there and hoping for one of the big financial positions in Europe or indeed in America, if he hangs in there for that, he'll have less hassle, a lot more pay, and he won't have to do the hustings. It'll be a permanent job. So that's the way it goes from there. Anyway, let me go to Optometrist Liz Grennan, because Optonomy Ireland spokesperson Liz Grennan joins us in relation to the lottery that is children's eye care, which is very disturbing as well. Liz, morning to you.
How are things?
Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us today. And ironically, I was reading a press release indeed from the HSE in Galway, where allegedly they have cleaned up a huge list of people that were waiting indeed for eye treatment as well. And then yet, when I read this, then it's a lottery in children's eye care.
There is, unfortunately, and that's the sort of more vulnerable eye care. You know, I know everyone who needs something done, obviously it's important to them. But yes, a lot has been done. A lot of that has been done through the Treatment Purchase Fund, which obviously costs a lot of money. And that's a lot of the older cohort, maybe with cataracts and things like that. Mm-hmm. But really what we're trying to focus on is ending the geographical lottery for the younger 8 to 16 year olds, as there's no public program, national public program for them for eye testing or provision of glasses or eye care at all. So I'd say it's really important at that stage to get children seeing well in school, being able to participate in sports, so that in the future they have less issues, you know, making things just that little bit easier for them.
Yeah, but I was reading your press release on the HSE last evening, and maybe you haven't seen it now, where they were talking about where waiting times for paediatric patients requiring eye tests have been reduced dramatically from 2 years to 6 weeks in Galway under the new ophthalmology modernised care pathway. Over 3,500 children have been treated from the waiting list, including 2,633 who've been waiting for more than a year. And they're talking about, I mean, is
Galway is actually great.
Good. Castlebar
actually has a great one. But it's a lot of other places that don't, and this is the issue. And even within health areas, so say different local health centres will give different allowances, or will say, no, we don't have an over eight scheme, we only do the under eight scheme. And then so children who are timing out of that under eight scheme and have been happily using it, then go, and there's no more vouchers towards glasses, there's no more sort of public eye testing. And it's not that they're cured, they still need glasses, they still might need intervention, but it's just that they're timing it. So there are absolutely, there are pockets that are doing brilliantly, but that's all it is. It's just pockets. You can't go to Donegal and say it's going to be the same thing. You can't go to Westport and say it's going to be the same thing. So this is the issue, that it really is. You know, you can be lucky. You can absolutely be lucky. And that's the thing about it. But luck is something that we want to get rid of.
Well, as you know, from a parent's point of view, parents don't want luck. They want treatment, and they want an assessment. They want a diagnosis.
Yeah.
And at that stage, then they want to know what can be done. And the sooner you get these diagnoses, the better quality of life. Because if you don't do it early and it drags on and they go to school and they're having difficulty with studies and or otherwise, that's an impediment to their future.
Absolutely, to their learning, because obviously if they can't see, now when you're 4 or 5 or 6, a lot of your world is within that 1 meter range in school. But once you get into sort of the older age group of, you know, primary school and then into secondary school, you know, up to 16, we're talking about children who are doing their junior cycle, you know, and onwards, and they're in a bigger classroom, and they just don't. If you always have not great eyesight, you don't think that Johnny sitting beside you can see everything. You just presume everyone is seeing the same as you. So it's at the moment the pressure is on parents to be listening to their kids, observing them really closely to see, are they noticing, oh gosh, actually, you know, they're closing one eye, or they're saying, or they're missing words, or they're saying they can't see the television clearly. Yeah. And then, though, the next question is, where do they go with that information? So a lot of times they go to their GP, or hopefully they'll come to their local optometrist, and then both the GP or the optometrist can maybe, if required, refer them into the community hub. However, there was just a meeting there the other day, and again in the area where I work in, over more in the eastern side, the routine appointment is now 12 to 26 weeks. So that's 3 to 6 months for if a child cannot see the board. So I say, while that is actually a huge improvement on what it was, we want to bring that down. And Optometry Ireland, we have 700 optometrists, very well and capable, very well able and capable of testing children's eyes. And then, if required, that smaller cohort who maybe need to be referred for more specialised care into these hubs, then can be seen by the hub. So again, we're trying to sort of help bring, you know, get, if we could do the routine stuff and then refer on as needed, that would be great.
And do the government pay ye as optometrists to do this? Because there's nearly one in every village in the country.
Well, now, how long do we have? Again,
2 minutes and 13 seconds.
Yes. Yes, it depends is the answer. Again, as you say, so it's a difficult answer, as you can hear. We're supposed to get paid, and some centres do get paid and some don't, or as in they're waiting a long time for payment and things like that. So, and this is the issue. So, and we have been over a number of years, more than 10 years, we have made detailed submissions to the government to call for progress on this and to call for, you know, the rollout of this national programme for the 8 to 16 year olds and to include us in that. And because, as I say, we're numerous, we're available, we're highly qualified and well positioned, exactly as you said, in each community to sort of give advice or give treatment where needed.
And again, it's a small investment that they have to make in this. Maybe the new
Taoiseach,
be it Pascal or be it Simon, maybe they will listen to you, because it's very important. And I know, because my late brother indeed had very bad eyesight, and he was identified at a very early age and gave him a great quality of life indeed.
Great.
But that's now, I'm going back 102 years. But back then we had a better service, so we did, be it dental or ophthalmic, than we have today.
Yeah. And that's the thing, it is, it's not, as you say, you might be going back a few years, but it's not that things have dramatically improved. Yes, pockets absolutely have, and it's brilliant to see local areas that are really being proactive and moving this forward. But unfortunately, there is no national protocol. You could ring to five local health centres and be told, well, five different things. We don't cover an eye test, we do cover an eye test. Or we give you such and such for glasses, or actually we don't cover glasses at all, and things like that. So I'd say it's just, let's have a little bit of a sort of a more even spread of the facilities. And as optometrists, I say, we're well able, well capable, and absolutely, you know, banging on the door for so long of government saying, you know, please use us. You know, that's what we're here for.
All right. Optometrist Liz Grennan, representing Optometry Ireland, joining us on the line there. And again, further details from your local optometrist, and they're all wonderful. I go to Helen Walsh and the crew, but they're everywhere. They're just everywhere. In most villages, I have to say, and sometimes you can't afford it, but talk to them and see if something can be put in place. Now, let's head towards I'm running a bit late now, haven't I? Let's go to the 10 o'clock news.